Welcome to the Aquarimax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 316, recorded November 21st, 2016. We are doing an interview today with Nate and Ron from Function Built Aquatics.
Welcome.
Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hey, how are you guys?
This evening. We're doing well. How are you?
Fantastic. It's a little cold in New Jersey, but we're in our nice warm basement, and our fish room is right next to us, so we're super excited about being on with you guys. We appreciate you reaching out.
Yeah, we're excited too. This has been several weeks in coming. We noticed your YouTube channel and thought it would be really fun to talk to you and find out more about what you're doing and introduce you to a lot of our listeners. So
in fact, before we get on the actual questions, let's maybe just do a short introduction for people who maybe haven't seen their channel yet.
Sure.
Who they are and what they do.
Okay. Well, can you just give us a brief overview? We're going to ask you more in-depth a little later, more about your channel and so on, but can you give us just a, if you had to introduce your channel and what you're doing in like three sentences, what would you say?
Pretty much fully functional palatariums, and our key focal point is wild betta fish.
Cool. Yeah, I think that's a perfect introduction. We'll get a little deeper into that in a little while.
Okay.
So, Kelly, why don't you start with our first couple of questions?
Okay, well, first off, why don't you two tell us about how you first became interested in keeping aquariums?
Now, there's a few stories. Here's my story. When I was about 7 or 8, my dad bought me a beta splendon called Pepsi, and Pepsi was my first ever fish. He was absolutely amazing, and I've had him for the last 2 years before he passed away. But anyway, that started us into the palatarium, which brings us into all the tanks and wild betas we have today.
Now, my story is a little bit different. I was basically, this hobby was passed down to me through my father. It was basically hereditary. He carried that gene, and then he gave that gene to me. I've been involved in anything aquatic pretty much my whole entire life. I've kept salamanders and turtles in containers under my bed when I was not allowed to have them. And then when I was able to actually have these animals and appreciate, you know, the type of environments that they would require, I started going more towards developing environments and ecosystems, and a lot less with the animals. I actually appreciated building something that mimicked nature a little bit more than I actually appreciated just keeping a turtle or frog. I wanted to try to duplicate nature as much as possible. So it started from birth for me, and I've been doing this for 44 years.
Awesome.
Yeah. I think it's fun that you're carrying it on, you know, through your son. So it's
three
at least three generations, and hopefully it'll keep going after that.
Absolutely. No, it's definitely three generations.
Very cool. So you talked a little bit about, you know, how much you enjoy creating the environment. Maybe tell us a little bit more about that or other things that really attract you to the hobby.
Oh, absolutely. So as I started getting more involved in developing, trying to mimicking their natural environments and the habitats that the animals were found in, you know, I started gravitating a lot less from reptiles and amphibians and more towards fish in my early teens. And I went into saltwater fish at some point into my later teens. And then that actually carried me through for quite some time into the reef aquarium phase, which brought me back full circle into what we do now with the paludariums and the ripariums. I wanted to bring that same thought process that a reef aquarist would you know, in developing a reef tank to freshwater aquariums. I wanted to be able to bring Nathan into a hobby that I know that he could do while I actually went off and did my day job. And if I was gone for, you know, a full day, I needed to have something that Nate would be able to maintain. And we got into the freshwater paludariums, and I started tying in a lot of the reef aquarium mindset into those.
Cool.
Yeah. So a lot of our listeners focus on freshwater aquariums. So could you give us an example of how your reef hobby has directly influenced your work with paludariums, for example?
Definitely. The development of the actual reef formation with live rock and live corals, I decided to try to find a way to use the expandable foam method and the sponge core method that we use to actually create a living land formation that you could actually not only have it look aesthetically pleasing, but it would be functional. And that's where the name Functional Aquatics also comes into. So we'll talk about that a little bit also. But I wanted to build something that would not only look like a nice aesthetic pleasing formation, but it had to be functional. It had to be live. It had to actually have beneficial bacteria living in it. It had to hold plants, and it had to actually be functional enough to actually clean the water. So when you develop a reef tank, your main process is, you know, of course, the live rock and to build a reef formation that looks natural. I wanted to do the same with the paludariums, and that's why we went towards the paludariums. That was the only way I could figure out how I could tie the freshwater hobby into and mimic that saltwater crave that I had with reef tanks. And to be honest with you, when we started building the paludariums, I never looked back. I love reef aquariums. I do still subscribe to plenty of people that have them, but the amount of work and the intensity involved is just too much for me and my 11-year-old to handle when I'm not around. But our paludariums, in my opinion, I mean, they're not exactly at that level of a full-blown reef tank, but they fill that urge that I have, and they have become basically functional living ecosystems.
Cool. So we have listeners, you know, from very beginners to very experienced aquarists. So give us a quick definition of what a paludarium is as opposed to just a normal aquarium.
Right. A paludarium would be a fixed formation that you would hold a sort of a plant-based media, and then you would use plants to not only grow with their roots submerged, but allow the plants actually to access the water column through their roots, and they would absorb nutrients that way. So not only do they become a fully functional part of the terrain, but they're actually a major part of filtration. So now you're tying in a way to absorb ammonia, a way to absorb nitrates, and actually make a fully functional living filtration system. And that's you know, the paludariums are, you know, basically that. What you're doing is you're building an external mass that holds plants that is still somewhat attached to the water column and still allows the roots to get into the water column and absorb those nutrients. And you know, you basically light it the way you would a standard plant in an aquarium, but you have your aquatic plants and your terrestrial plants pretty much working together.
Cool.
So it shares some common ground with aquaponics?
Very much so. You're talking about something that's pretty much cousin to aquaponics. And then for the most part, I started using clay balls as my go-to substrate for our paludariums and our ripariums, and that came directly from aquaponics. Not only do the clay balls act as substrate for the plants to actually grow in, but as you know, in time, since they're made of clay, they do leach some iron into the water, which has been extremely beneficial. One of the paludariums we have actually built, the moss is like growing like a forest, and it's not my skills. it just kind of fell into play, and the plants and the moss have really started to develop, and a lot of it is actually just really just fell right in the line with the development of the Paludarium.
So the unique environment that it creates with the connection with the atmospheric CO2 and that immense surface area and so on are just providing a really excellent environment for them.
Surface area.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, if you saw some of the tanks that plenty of Paludariums that I've actually watched videos of, and a lot of them are so densely packed with fish, and the only way you could get away with that, unless you just had immense filtration systems hidden somewhere inside the cabinetry, was if the plants were actually doing a major portion of the filtration themselves. And, for example, I have a Paludarium that is barely 13 gallons of water. I mean, Nathan and I measured the water when we first set it up, and it took 13 one-gallon jugs. There's 42 fish in that tank.
Wow.
I don't think that you could actually get away with a balance without having the plants do a major portion of the filtration if you just relied on chemical, biological, and mechanical filtration with a canister filter. That same tank is driven on an Eheim canister filter, but to be honest with you, it's a pre-owned. I bought it used off Craigslist. I don't even really think it works to its full capacity. The plants do the job of backing up that canister filter to the best of their ability, and actually, I think they surpass the canister filter in regards to filtration.
That makes sense. And there's another way that it's connected to aquaponics, where you can have a pretty heavy fish load as long as the plants are doing what they're supposed to be doing. So there really are a lot of ties, it looks like.
There are. Another tie with a Paludarium in a reef tank is, for me, is that, of course, with reef tanks, there are some that have a lot of fish and there are some that do not. But the ones that do have a lot of fish, the reef tank owner has to really balance out the feedings. You can't overfeed the fish. Of course, a lot of the fish are there for a purpose, so they're not really getting a lot of external feedings. In a Paludarium, you're dealing with tetras and rasboras, and a lot of these fish have to actually be fed an external food for them to actually survive in that type of tank. So you do have to actually, step up your water changes. I still do a 25% water change every week, which, to be honest with you, is not a lot. I know a lot of people that do 50% water changes, on discus tanks and so on. But 25% water change on a 13-gallon tank is pretty strong. And we're talking about a tank that probably gets fed, if I had my guess, Nate, how many times a day?
About 2 to 3.
2 to 3 times a day that tank gets fed. And those fish are just going through their cycle.
Yeah, that's it makes me think of when I look at your tanks, because I've watched quite a few of your YouTube videos, and see how pristine they look. I mean, they look really nice. The water's really clear. The plant life is just flourishing, and so are the fish. And there's a place where it kind of breaks off from aquaponics and is more like a reef tank. The aquaponic systems that I've visited several facilities that have large-scale aquaponic systems, some of them you can't even see into the water. I mean, that's how dirty the water is. And in your Paludarium, it's totally the opposite. I mean, the water is crystal clear, and everything looks great. So even though you're benefiting from some of the same principles, you're also taking into account the aesthetics, which many of these aquaponic systems are just taking into account the practicality of the growth of the fish and the plants, where in your case, you're taking those into account, but you're also making it beautiful, which I think is great.
Well, that's a great point, and I get exactly what you mean. I mean, the aquaponic system is going to be more of, I'll tie it right back into, again, with functionality. It's a completely functioning system that has a purpose, and it's not necessarily meant, to maintain, crystal clear water. But in our type of system, I've learned so much more about freshwater fish with these type of environments. I mean, I'm the kind of person that once I get sucked in, I'm in all the way. So you got me all the way. I'll read, I'll constantly research, and I'll constantly come up with different ideas to do something new or different. It really took our second Paludarium to get it right, to where the foam was not lifting off the glass, and it was actually holding its structure. And the clay balls were doing exactly what they needed to do. And that's the South American Paludarium that you probably have seen the video of. It's the one where it's a double tank. There's a tetra tank underneath of it, and then the actual Paludarium's on top. That particular video, that particular setup in that video is the one that I believe we actually got right. Right. I mean, both Nathan and I say all the time, that tank right there is probably our proudest tank. It's not our first tank. The first tank is a Chinese mountain stream Paludarium. And that tank has some flaws, but it still runs well. And that tank probably has how many fish in it?
About 40 to 50.
No, it's probably close to 42 fish, I think, because there's a lot of white clouds in there, and they reproduce heavily. But to make a long story short, that tank has its faults. It was the first one. The second one benefited from the first one, and it became, in our opinion, pretty much my favorite tank and the one I want to always show people when they come in the basement. And once again, I tied that reef mentality into freshwater aquariums. I had people tell me all the time, oh, you can't do it. It's not the same. You know, and some of the reef purists are like, oh, you can't compare that tank to a reef tank. I'm not. But what I'm trying to do is, I'm trying to bring in that mentality and the thought process into freshwater aquariums. And I think I did. I think I got that done.
I think you did, too. I love that tank. That was one of the first tanks, I think, that I saw on your channel. That's the one with the neons on top and the black neons on the bottom, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, I guess I should say system, not tank, because there are two tanks. But anyway.
Right,
Yeah, it really is. It's a work of art, but it's also... the practical aspects are also beautiful in how well they work. So I think you got best of both worlds there. Practicality
makes... Thank you.
Aesthetics. Yeah, you're welcome. It really is. And that's one of the things that made me think, oh, we need to get these guys on our podcast. We need to talk to them.
That's so cool. I mean, I'll be honest with you. The fact that you even thought of us to do that is... You got to see the look on our faces right now. I mean, I'm still smiling right now. You could probably hear it. It's just I could talk about this stuff for hours. We all have something in our lives that we all believe we were meant to do, and I got to be honest with you. I have felt that way about this my entire life. This is the one thing that no matter what goes on, business wise or family wise or friends. This is the one thing that always makes me happy. And I tried so hard to wait until the point where Nathan was at the age where he can come in and he can enjoy it with me. And let me tell you, he could vouch for this. Being in this hobby with me, I'm a little bit of a fanatic, cannot be easy. But he has learned so much. I mean, I went to a parent-teachers conference, and his teacher told us his science knowledge is off the charts. And that's because of this hobby. It's this hobby that taught my son, you know, water chemistry and husbandry and biology.
It helps.
Yeah, it really, really does make a difference. Mm-hmm. And that's another great thing that I noticed when I saw that you are doing this together, the hobby together, the channel together. I think it's great. I think
it is. It's awesome.
It is. And we do some of that in our family as well. All our kids are interested in our critters and our fish, and some of them have some of their own pets now, and it's neat to see that development. It's not as common as it should be. I think the more that this is something that family members can share, I think the better it is for the hobby and the better it is for families.
You're right. You're truly right.
And that's where you're starting to see a lot more of these conferences, where I used to go to reptile shows often to try to come up with ideas to adapt to this hobby. I'd be the one guy at the reptile show not looking to buy a corn snake. I was looking for leaves, right? I was looking for bromeliads and leaves to add to our paludariums. And I used to say all the time, wow, there's families here. Why do we not have, how come we don't have aquarium shows to this level where there are people walking around with a baby in a carriage? I gotta tell you, that's probably what happened to me, you know. And I mean, it may not have been a show, but it was an aquarium, and I was put in front of it as an infant, and I mean, it was just projected on me. So you know, Nathan is ready now. He's at that maturity stage where he can actually go and he can do the work. And I could say, hey, Nate, you know, the fry, I've got to get fed. I'm going to be going. I'll leave at 2:30 in the morning and go to work. And I know that he's got the level of experience that he can feed. We have beta fry, probably 300-400 fry at this point, different groups that we're working with. And they have to be fed 2-3 times a day. And Nathan now is at the point where he can feed them and make sure that they get the proper nutrients.
Well, it's awesome, and it teaches them so much about responsibility and caring for another organism and, you know, another creation, and it's really cool.
Yeah, it is.
Yep, Go ahead, Nate.
All right. Me and my dad would sit there and look at one of our paludariums or any of our tanks and think, wow, we do this together. And it's an amazing project that everyone create if they just try.
Great point, dude.
Yeah, that is a great point. I think a lot of people could benefit from hearing that and trying that out.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of the beta fry, do you want to tell us some about your wild beta type projects?
Sure. We have a lot of beta types, here, I'll tell you a list. Beta Hendra, Beta Albia marginata, Beta Chanoids, Beta Forshi, Beta Mahachiensis. We also do Beta Splendens, and don't forget Beta Forshi. That's a few of our types of betas that we use. We're probably going to get more breeds and more types of betas later on in the future, but that's who we have so far.
And out of the list of the six wild beta fish that Nathan just mentioned that we're working with, the only one that we have not spawned yet is the Beta Forshi. I think they're a little young yet, so we're going to maybe wait until they're at that proper size. But for the most part, you know, we've been lucky enough to have spawned every one of the species except for the Forshi. The Beta Hendra are the most recent group of betas we worked with.
We'd even have to try. They would breed colonies.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, the best way to breed wild beta fish, for any listener out there that's into wild beta fish, is to spend the money and import them from Indonesia or Thailand, because the flight from Thailand to the United States to the transshipper, and then the flight from the transshipper to your destination, you put those guys together and the barometer change and all the different air pressure and everything else turns them on like clockwork. And when you get them home, they usually spawn right away. And it's funny because we look at each other and think, hey, we're really that good? No, we had nothing to do with it. it was just all the different environmental changes that actually kicked them in the gear. And then once they're in the gear like that, though, you know, you have to maintain them. And the best thing to do is to keep them sometimes separated and put them together and pair them when you want to breed them. If I had my favorite beta fish to choose out of that group that he mentioned, Beta Chanoids would be my favorite. We imported those guys from Indonesia about 2 years ago.
Yeah, they were our first wild betas, and actually my dad was working by the time they arrived, and I had to acclimate them. And it was a long story how I had to do it, because the bag wasn't open when I was doing it, and water, like, spilled everywhere when I was trying to fill them up and acclimate them.
Yeah.
So it took another hour for me to do that.
In the end, though, he figured it out. In the end, like a champ, he figured it out.
Yeah, he must have done a great job, because they survived and you spawned them, so hey.
Yeah, yep. Yes, we did. But, you know, it's funny because, you know, the wild beta fish, you know, started with a PetSmart bought Beta Splendens. His name was Pepsi. He was the first beta fish that I purchased for Nathan. And from that fish, you know, started us into the wild beta fish, and we haven't looked back. I've been getting messages from different guys that know we're into beta fish and ask us if we're interested in this group or that group, and I just wish I had more space.
Right.
Yeah. Now, what made the transition from you know, a domestic betta splendens into wild-type bettas. I could totally see how one type of betta would get you into another, but the transition from, you know, a lot of people, they pick up a pet store betta like a veil tail, and then they start getting into, say, half moons or placots or whatever. What made you jump into wild-type bettas of other species?
Okay, this is something that Nathan has actually had to learn the hard way.
Yeah.
Pepsi was one of those unfortunate, you know, mass-produced, ornamental betta fish that had he had diamond eye, which is a fairly common trait.
Yeah, it'll blow. Here's what happens: his eye will become swollen and crystallized. It would look like a big crystal. Then it will pop off.
Yeah, I mean he lived for
quite a long time.
Yeah, a while like that. But I said to Nathan, I said, look, you know, unfortunately. The problem here is these fish are just they're not
genetically messed up.
They're not properly bred. They're probably bred extremely close to the gene pool, and that's a shame because, you know, listen, they have to supply an industry, and the breeders do what they have to do. I vowed that I would try to go for a more genetically pure fish, and the only way to do that would be to bring in wild fish that were caught in wild and that were I knew were. You know, proper strains. And then when we did that, we started seeing the different groups of fish, and I started thinking to myself, wow, are these not the coolest bettas I've ever seen? They're amazing, but they're social. Well, I'm able to keep pretty much all the bettas that we mentioned except for the splendens, which is your the basis for what you see in PetSmart and Petco and your placots and so on, you know, all pretty much come from the splendens. I'm able to keep everybody else, you know, together. The Mahatiensis are the same. They're tough on each other. But the Betta Hendra, the Albi Marginata, and the Chanoids, they live in groups. I'm able to keep two males to every female or three males to every female. And I don't have any casualties.
That's amazing.
You know,
yeah, I think that's really cool. I remember you were saying on your channel that I think you said that Indonesian bettas tend to be a lot more tolerant of each other and social.
Absolutely, and the Indonesian bettas that we keep are all mouth brooding betta fish, and they are very social animals. As a matter of fact, they show their best colors, like all bettas, they show their best colors when they're staring at another male, you know, or a female that they're trying to actually, you know, flirt with, and they show their best colors in that manner. Now, if you've seen our videos, so you notice that, like, those tanks are black water tanks. So I have plenty of family members come in, and, like, they know that we're into fish. They know we just moved into my back room, which is now the fish room. And they'll look in these tanks and be like, I can't see a fish. Why is the water so dark? And you know, that's the environment that these fish live in, that black water environment. And that's how they're displayed properly, in my opinion. And, you know, that's how we maintain them. And that's probably a big part of why we've been successful is that we tried to mimic their natural environment to the best of our ability.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really what it's all about, isn't it?
Absolutely. With like I said before, in the end, my favorite portion of this hobby, more than the animals themselves, is recreating that habitat for them. I love that. Because to me, if I can recreate the habitat, then I believe I can actually give the animal what it deserves.
Right. Yeah. Definitely a lot of truth to that. So I have a question about the, you're saying that they're black water habitat, so they need pretty acid water with not a lot of dissolved minerals in it. Is that right?
Absolutely. Okay. We use RO and DI water. I fill a 50-gallon trash can pretty much twice a week. So we do a lot of water changes, and we use a lot of leaves. Now, we're into botanicals, and, you know, one of the companies I found that I actually fell in love with, and the owner is a fantastic man, Tannin Aquatics. You know, he's able to procure a lot of botanicals I just could not find in a one location. So I can get my Indian almond leaves, magnolia leaves, oak leaves, all the different types of leaves I use to actually make the water as dark as I do. I rely a lot less on driftwood for coloring and a lot more on leaves. And I allow the leaves to decompose and do their thing. And, you know, within the leaves, there's tiny little microorganisms that live. So when you do have fry on occasion that you miss, every now and then you get surprised and you didn't realize that there was somebody in there developing who's been feeding on some microorganisms that have been living in the leaves and the adults have left alone. And you get surprised every now and then, and we find something that, hey, I didn't know he was in there. We thought the only fry we had were the ones growing out in the 2.5 or 5 gallon tanks. And a lot of that has to do with the botanicals and the dark water.
Now, one time we were searching in the Albia marginata tank, and we found this one little female Albie traveling around in there, and they haven't bred in, let's say, about 2 to 3 months, and she was in there looking at the mommy, and then I was so confused. I went to go get my dad, and he was like, how is she in there? We haven't got fry in like 2 months from them.
Yeah, and they spawn, and the male disappeared with a mouthful of eggs at some point, and they found a way to survive.
That's really cool.
It is. That is one thing that I find fascinating about keeping, systems that are natural enough that things like that can happen. I think that's great. That's a really big attraction for me to creating a system like that.
I totally agree. Totally agree with that.
So I wanted to ask you to explain a little bit more about your name, Function Built Aquatics, why you chose that name. I think you've hinted at it somewhat, but can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Absolutely. Now, the name Function Built actually, prior to Nathan and I going neck deep into this hobby, I was into a show car that at that point I had nicknamed Function Built. I wanted to build a car that was not only aesthetically pleasing but was completely functional. So everything that we did to it, any customization I did to the car, actually worked and actually could be put into play. I moved on from that car when my son told me he no longer liked going to car shows for 6 to 7 hours on a Saturday, and it just wasn't his thing. And I couldn't see taking my time, away from him to go sit at a car show. So we got rid of the car. And that was when we opened up the door to the aquariums even more than we already had. At that point, we only had 2 tanks set up.
Yeah, by the time we got rid of my dad's car, we were only getting started. We were only just getting finished making the paludarium.
Right, so at that point we realized that, all right, well, this is an opportunity for us to develop this hobby together. And the name Function Built came from the vehicle itself. But when we tied it into the hobby, I said to Nathan, I want to build a paludarium, but it cannot just look pretty. It actually has to work. So the formation, the paludarium formation, has got to be functional. If it's not able to actually help with the bio load and become a functioning biological filter, then I don't want something that looks like it works, but when you get behind it and you start tinkering with it or critiquing it, you realize it's not what you thought it was. I wanted to build something that was actually functional, and that's what Function Built Aquatics means to me. It's an actual functioning biological environment that not only is aesthetically pleasing, but, in my opinion, can do its job. And that's, I proved that by, at least in my opinion, I tried proving that by adding more and more fish. I kept saying, let's keep pushing it to the level, if the fish are unhappy, we'll know, and then we'll start taking some out. And then at some point, we just gave up on adding fish to one of the tanks. And like we said, someone might get upset and say, hey, you have a 13-gallon aquarium that has almost 40 fish in it, but, they're an inch and a half long, and they have plenty of space, and I don't think they're suffering in any way, but, you know, Function Boat Aquatics came from that. That's exactly how it was born. It was a functioning environment.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I was intrigued by the name as soon as I saw it, and so
I was dying to find a way to try to, you know, I wanted to jazz up what we were doing, and I was dying to find a way to. I used to go to car shows, and the culture is so cool. I mean, the music culture. I mean, there were car shows that we would go to. There would be DJs and probably multiple DJs at these shows, and you know, playing, you know, all modern new music and tying these incredibly produced videos, which I can never duplicate. I don't have anywhere near the skills that some of these guys do. But I said to myself, man, why couldn't we tie that into this hobby and you know, and maybe take it a little bit into, you know, into a different light? You would get some of these high school and college guys that are going to these car shows and be like, wow, I mean, that's pretty cool, man. That aquarium video I watched with some of the music that was tied into it, you know, with the copyright laws are probably a big issue, but you know, I said it would be nice to find a way to tie that into it, because it would draw a different crowd, a crowd that could really, really, if they took the time to watch what we all do in this hobby, they would probably say, I could dig that. I could get into that, you know, and that's what we tried to do.
Yeah, and I think it's working. I think it looks like your channel is building up followers. You're getting more subscribers all the time, and you're very prolific with your channel too. You're putting out a lot of videos, which is great.
Yeah, we do. Nate tells me all the time, Dad, we're putting out too many videos. Dad, we're putting out too many videos. And I'm like, hey, dude, as long as we have something to put out, you know, I don't time them where, you know, I try to be as organic as possible. But I'm constantly doing something different with one of our tanks or a different addition. So, you know, my personality is constantly on the move, constantly on the go. And as you could tell by the channel, it pretty much reflects that. I think it's like the tanks are the same, in the same deal where, you know, they're never changing completely, but there's something new. Like, for example, we stopped by our local fish store yesterday, and I had no intention of buying any fish because, you know, we have plenty of fish. But I saw something there that both Nathan and I have always talked about, that we always wanted to get, and that was a giant gourami. And for the first time, and I don't think this guy's ever carried them in a store, he had a tank full of these young giant gouramis. And I knew that when Nate saw this fish, his jaw was going to drop. And I already said right then and there, I know I'm going to overpay for the fish in this store. You know, God bless my local fish store. He charges an astronomical price for fish, but he's the only show. He's the only show in town, so he can get away with it. And I said, but it's worth it. I'm not going to walk out of here and disappoint him. And he looked at the fish. I said, go get John. I said, we're going to take one home. He's like, are you serious, Dad? I was like, absolutely. I said, we'll put him in one of our tanks.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, we've been watching him. He's actually in the only tank that's in my son's playroom, and he's literally right to our right hand side, and we're watching him cruise around now. He's pretty cool.
That is cool, and he's going to be around a while, I imagine, and get really, really big.
That's what I told Nathan that this fish is going to outlive your father.
Yeah.
So he'll be 60, you'll be 100.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's cool. Well, there's something that we would like to ask you to do. If you would share with us and with our listeners especially your information for your social media, your YouTube channel, and any other, if you have a Twitter account or a Facebook page or anything else that you'd like to share too, so that they can check out your YouTube channel first and foremost, and then any other ways that they would be able to, you know, connect with you or contact you.
Absolutely. So as we mentioned before, we are on YouTube as Function Built Aquatics, and it's pretty much all one word. And we're also on Instagram at Function Built Aquatics. And
underscore.
Yeah, the underscore is at the very end. So it's Function Build Aquatics on Instagram, all one word, underscore.
Cool.
And that's pretty new for us, actually. The Instagram channel has been fairly – I used to tie all the fish into my my personal Instagram channel. Now I haven't been on my personal Instagram channel in probably the past 2 months, and I've been mostly posting all our fish stuff is going on the Instagram channel, Function Build Aquatics, and I like it. It's a nice opportunity to share a quick photo and a short video and maybe connect with people, you know, from all over the world. Especially now, I've had some people offer us some really cool betta fish that, like I mentioned before, I wish I had extra money and I wish I had extra room.
Yeah, I know the feeling. Yeah. Well, I think it's great what you both are doing, and we've really enjoyed talking to you. We would like you to stay on the line for a little while after we stop the recording, but we'd like to thank you both for joining us. We think what you're doing is great, and we hope you keep doing it, and we hope all of our listeners go check out your channel and leave lots of comments and subscribes and likes and all sorts of things.
Yep.
Thank you very much, guys. We both really appreciate the opportunity to go on and on and on about the one thing that I think Nathan and I are in love with. I mean, when it comes to a hobby, I couldn't think of a better hobby for a father, a son, a daughter, and a father, or a mother and a daughter to share together. It's probably one of the last true family hobbies left. You know, that you can still create these type. Well, I mean, it is the only one I know you create these type of environments and actually maintain an animal in this fashion. It's I appreciate the opportunity to talk about it, and I can go on and on for days. But thank you very much for thinking of us, and I hope that we have something that we can offer to other people out there to maybe jump into and enjoy.
Yeah,
definitely. And we'd like to extend an invitation sometime to have you back and just, check up with you and see what you're doing, because I know there's always going to be something new going on.
Absolutely. I would love that. I mean, and we'll make sure that we can – we'll definitely have a couple new things for you guys.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Awesome. Well, thank you, guys.
Yeah. Thank you, Ron and Nate of Function Built Aquatics, for joining us.
Bye, guys.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. To leave comments or questions that could be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.